The band have played, and it's that time of the week, wherever you happen to be listening, for us to open the doors and look out of the window. And I'm looking out the window recording this at coming up to 4 o'clock on Thursday, the 14th of January here in the UK. And this bit of Lincolnshire is covered in snow. I wonder whether Bruce K. Rosenblum has snow falling gently upon his roof, or whether he's there in a T-shirt about to go out and sit round the pool and have a great time. Bruce K. Rosenblum, are you there?
Bruce K. Rosenblum is here. And it's up to 85 degrees today where I am, so I can't explain it. The last time we chatted, it was bordering on freezing, and that was just about a week ago, right?
Crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
It might have been 49 degrees. Now we're up to 85 degrees, but I have a few, I keep saying, when are we going to get some rain and some winter weather? We need it desperately here.
Well, we can send it here because I'm looking out of my window. I can see into the park just to the back of where we live, and there are children and families playing snowballs. They're all socially distant because they're about at least 3 meters apart, and we have the pandemic to talk about. But yesterday, the huge news was that President Trump has become the only president in the whole history of you having presidents, which is 50-odd, to be impeached twice. Where does this put things, Bruce?
It puts things in a very delicate place. First of all, what's interesting is this impeachment was the first one to have bipartisan support. The other ones have been voted on along party lines. But 10 Republicans broke with the party yesterday and voted in support of the impeachment. So it was a pretty pretty convincing vote. It wasn't, it wasn't close. And so what it does now is serves as an indictment that President Trump goes on record as having the House sees him as having created this insurrection that took place, a little over a week ago at the Capitol. And his words incited this insurrection that led to the desecration of the Capitol and leading to the death of 5 people, including 2 Capitol police officers, one who was bludgeoned with a fire extinguisher, which is just unbelievable. But now it gets a little bit more complex because the Senate doesn't go back into session until the 19th. Of January, and Mitch McConnell has gone on record saying there's not enough time and he's not going to call the Senate back into session to begin the trial immediately. So he's kind of pushing the ball into Biden's court and saying this is your problem now and your Senate's problem, because McConnell will become the minority leader in the House and not the majority leader. So Chuck Schumer will be leading the Senate trial. Now, contrary to popular belief, a trial can be conducted for a president who's no longer sitting. And what it really boils down to is if it was a trial against a sitting president, a conviction would mean removal. But in this case now, that is because it's a second impeachment, they can try. And if they find him guilty of the insurrection, of causing the insurrection, what it will do, and I think this is what everybody's kind of betting on, is that it will kind of purge him from the Republican Party, because it will not allow him to run for federal office. He'll lose his pension. I think he loses his Secret Service detail, and then he loses the opportunity to run again for federal office. So I think that's really what's kind of behind this whole thing, and I think Mitch McConnell's kind of teed off enough because of what happened at the end of this election cycle, where this runoff in Georgia, because of Trump's just hanging on to this whole ideology that the election was stolen and he won in a landslide and all this other nonsense, that it cost McConnell the leadership of the Senate, the majority leadership, because they lost those 2 Senate seats in Georgia, which made it a Democratic Senate. And so he's really angry at Trump. They've gone so far, reports have gone so far to say he hates Trump at this point. And rather than taking a stand like he did during the first impeachment, where McConnell said there is really no evidence of a bad phone call and that there's no reason to throw him out, to accuse and remove. This time he's open. He was very open to the impeachment trial in the House. He was very open to the impeachment hearings, and he's very open to the trial in the Senate. And what most people think is that he's kind of hoping that if the Senate does go to trial, if he basically says, if he's convinced that the evidence is the evidence is convincing enough that Trump did lead this insurrection through his words, that if he can get 17 or more of his fellow Republicans to agree with him, and they convict Trump, it's their opportunity to kind of remove him from the Republican Party. And it's
okay. Let me interrupt there.
That's kind of where we stand there.
That's great. We've heard this word impeachment. This is the second time. He's the first president ever to be impeached twice. But he could still run. It's the conviction when he's tried in the Senate. That's the thing that could really clip his wings. Is that right?
Right. The thing that'll clip his wings is if he's convicted in the Senate. And I think that there are a number of Republicans who really have aspirations for running in 2024. And Trump is kind of a roadblock. And I think deep down these people know that that Trump is a bad guy. But because he has a lot of money and because he has still has a lot of influence over these supporters of his who are really out there, they're scared. They're afraid to, they're afraid to get in his way. And so, while they might believe one thing, they act differently. While they know he was guilty of insurrection, they'll still vote against the impeachment, or they'll still vote not to convict him. And it's kind of a double standard within there. But, apparently a lot of these Republicans are saying that they've been threatened to if they go outside party lines and not support Trump. Their families have been threatened. And based on what a lot of these people saw firsthand that what happened at the Capitol, they're very worried. They're very scared that there could be repercussions against them or their families.
Well,
it's a very real problem that this all poses for a lot of people.
It does. And let's look at the inauguration, which is next Wednesday. Normally a massive event with crowds in really upbeat fashion, whichever guy you voted for, and it's a day of celebration. Looking at the pictures, first of all, there is a ring of steel around the Capitol, and there are huge numbers of the National Guard. There are huge numbers of American service people on the ground. Apparently, there are more service people on duty in Washington, D.C., than you've currently got deployed overseas in places like Iraq, Afghanistan, and places like that. This is quite extraordinary, isn't it?
It is extraordinary, because usually this is a day of peaceful transition of power. It's a 500,000 to 1 million people lined up in the Capitol Mall, jumbotrons, seating. The president, meets the new president, meets the current president, and then they join together in a limo ride up to the Capitol, where they do the inauguration. I mean, it's the new elected president will then have walk down the Capitol Mall and shake hands with people, and it's a great occasion. It's a real rare thing to see, a transition of power, especially at that level.
But of course, at the moment, President Trump has said he is not going to be there. So one large bit of it's going to be missing.
Yeah. And because of this riot in the Capitol now, the city's under lockdown because there's a lot of noise and a lot of chatter on the internet that there's going to be another surge and an armed insurrection has been called for. And these groups are mobilizing, and they're threatening to kind of reappear on the scene in Washington, D.C. Either leading up to or on the day of the inauguration. And not only that, but they've called for the same kinds of armed insurrections at every state capital in the country. So just about every state now has called out its National Guard, and they're activating National Guard. Wisconsin is a state that just activated their National Guard to protect their state capital today. And that's what's happened in Washington, D.C. There's 20,000 troops, National Guards troops, all outfitted to the max in combat gear. There's miles and miles of 8-foot-tall steel fencing all around the city. So there's no jumbotrons, no chairs, no parade route. It's a ghost town in D.C. And it's they're preparing for a war. They're preparing for a civil war against our own people. And it's pretty frightening. Now, whether it actually takes place or not, You know, who knows? But the chatter out there is loud and serious enough for law enforcement to be taking this quite seriously. And they've been, and the FBI has been, you know, is on nationwide alert. They're arresting people. They're getting thousands and thousands of tips about people who were there at the last insurrection, and people are being arrested. And you know, it's you know, the penalty, if found guilty for doing what these people did, is pretty steep. It's anywhere from 10 to 20 years in prison. And it's no joke. And then they're rounding up a lot of the familiar faces that you've seen in photos from this insurrection. The guy wearing the Camp Auschwitz sweatshirt. They're looking for the guy who was carrying the Confederate flag. They've arrested the guy that was taking a picture stealing Nancy Pelosi's lectern. So they're looking for these people, and they're finding them. They're also trying to follow the money trail as to where the money came to provide people to get to travel and get there, to get the materials to make these bombs and explosive devices that were put around the Capitol. They're checking in, they're investigating, stories where they say that members of Congress were actually giving reconnaissance tours, maybe, you know, whether they were knowingly or unknowingly doing it, but giving tours to people in the Capitol when the tours, official tours of the Capitol, have been shut down because of the pandemic. Some of the organizers of that Capitol insurgents say that they got help from three congressmen, two congressmen from Arizona, and Mo Brooks from Alabama was supposedly a part of the organization of this insurrection and this rally in Washington, D.C. last week. So there's a lot of moving parts here that are being investigated, and a lot of different areas of law enforcement that are involved in trying to uncover what exactly happened. But they're saying that, you know, what was there was not only was this a rally of Trump supporters that had been out on the internet for a while, and Trump even saying, you know, be there on January 6th, it's going to be wild. He has not really put down these hate groups and these neo-Nazi groups and these Ku Klux Klanners and these QAnon groups. He's kind of became the poster boy for it, starting 4 years ago during Charlottesville when he said there was good people on both sides. And then during the debate where he told the Proud Boys to stand back and stand down, I mean, these people listen to him, and he's become the poster boy for these groups, their leader. And what he says, they act upon. So when he says march to the Capitol and fight like hell or you're going to lose your country, that's exactly what they do. And so, you know, he's really directly responsible for a lot of what's happening. You know, what's happened is a lot of it because of social media. These groups who've kind of been under a rock with really no formal way to recruit and join forces through these platforms like Parler and Facebook and Twitter have been able to, you know, recruit. They've been able to join forces. They've been able to promote their activities. So you've got like Ku Klux Klan, and you've got QAnon, and you've got Proud Boys, and you've got all these, you know, crazy right wing militia and hate groups that have joined forces and are all, doing whatever they're doing, and they're doing it. And what they've also learned is that they blend in like they look like anybody else. You know, the Ku Klux Klan is noted for their white robes and pointy hats, and Proud Boys are noted for their leather jackets. They're almost like a motorcycle gang. And QAnon people are out there, you know, they have this traditional garb that they wear with the Qs all over it. And these people are, you know, they're not showing up in their traditional garb. They're showing up as an average looking person, which makes it even, you know, more difficult for them to track down. So
what is Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and what's the transition team? How are they making sure that they're able to calm the country and help them through a difficult time to what hopefully will be, even without the jumbotrons, which is a word we don't have in the United Kingdom, next Wednesday. How are they calming things down? Because all we seem to see from the States is anger, investigation, troops, and more of Trump. Yesterday we had him delivering his little video homily, because of course he can't speak on Twitter now.
Yeah, well, first of all, he's pressured into doing these videos. He doesn't do them on his own volition. He gets pressured into doing them. Because he's made comments after he's done some of these that if he had it, you know, he regrets doing it, because he doesn't like to admit that he lost. He doesn't like to admit weakness, and he never takes responsibility for his actions. He just doesn't come out. He doesn't apologize, and he kind of gets forced into doing these things. So it was watching him. It was like a hollow words. I mean, he should have said these words from the heart, and he should have said them after the election. He should have conceded. He should have done all these things. So while it's great that he said these scripted words that he read off a teleprompter, they weren't from the heart. It wasn't because he wanted to do it. It's because he has to do it, because by doing it kind of lowers the temperature on some of the legal aspects that the country and states can go after him for. So he has to say that he's not condoning violence. He has to say that he has to say all these things in order to protect himself legally. And so it's kind of hollow. But there's not much Biden and Harris can do to calm people down, because it has to come from Trump, because it's his followers that are doing this. They're not going to listen to Biden. You know, all Biden can do is continue to say that he wants to, you know, promote unity in the country. He wants to bring the parties together. We're all Americans. He's going to be the president for all America, no red states. So he's been saying all those things, but you know, there's not much he can do until he really takes the oath of office and becomes president, so he can start showing it. But he's got his cabinet put together. He's got a stimulus plan he wants to get approved. More stimulus for people that have been affected by the pandemic. He wants to get kids back to school safely and provide funding in order to do that. They want to get the distribution of the vaccine out there to everybody at a much faster pace. At the same time, he says that the Congress, when they come back into session, should go about its business and starting to get his agenda done. At the same time, he thinks that they should make time to continue to do their trial in the Senate for Trump. So, you know, the Senate, which generally works 3 days a week, is going to have to work 5 days a week or 6 days a week in order to get whatever they're going to get done. But Biden really can't have a voice, or he doesn't really have much of a voice to do more than what he's been doing until he becomes president and he has the microphone, and he has that big microphone as being the president.
He's got the bullhorn. And of course, it'd be this time.
Right, they'll have the bullhorn.
See, I remember these terms, the bullhorn. So we've learned jumbotron and bullhorn. Okay, let's just move then into where we both in our countries are with the pandemic. We're rolling out the vaccine. Over 2 million people have been vaccinated here. They're ramping it up. They're doing 24-hour vaccination centres, particularly for people who are working on the front line. The numbers we have in this country are horrific. What's it like with you? Starting personally, you know, we've spoken on many occasions about some of your underlying health conditions. Are you able to get a vaccination yet?
Well, supposedly yes, but we're having a hard time finding a place to schedule an appointment to get one. They've lowered the restrictions, so now anybody 65 and over can get one. And we found a pharmacy on the road to the MASH set out in the Malibu area that we called, and they said yes, they will be getting the Moderna vaccine, and they put us because they don't feel that they're going to be able to give all of their allotment to the healthcare workers who get the first priority, that they don't want to waste their shots. So they're opening it up to the other levels. So someone like Jackie, who won't be 65 until September, but does have a pre-existing condition, she's eligible, and I'm over 65, so I'm eligible. So we're on the waiting list at that pharmacy for those shots. But other friends have already scheduled appointments at local pharmacies. My friend who lives up in the county north of Los Angeles County, Ventura County, he was able to lives in Ventura County, so he was able to schedule a vaccination for January 19th. But when I went on that site, I couldn't because I don't live in that county. So I'm trying to. We're also looking at the various pharmacies that our friends signed up at. And it's been really difficult because you fill out the application form and then you press the button to submit and it won't accept. And the person that we talked to said, just keep trying because eventually there'll be some glitch will open and your form will get submitted and you'll get a date. So
You are going to be in so much trouble, Mr. Rosenblum, for revealing your lovely wife's age next birthday. Oh. So maybe I'll have to edit that out. Oops, I can't, because that wouldn't be right and proper.
That's okay. So we're dealing with that. But at the same time, we're also dealing with COVID has struck our family. And we learned that our housekeeper had gotten COVID, that she called us and said that she was home very, very sick, that her doctor feels that she went to the market and probably contracted it when she did grocery shopping. And then she's been very, very sick. And we saw her the Wednesday before she told us. So she told us like on that weekend. We had seen her the Wednesday before. And she also not only works at our house, but she works at our son Evan's house. And what's interesting there is that, you know, Evan has his own underlying condition with these tumors, these non-cancerous tumors that he has. And his daughter, my granddaughter, has cerebral palsy, so she has a pre-existing condition as well. And anyway, long story short, my daughter-in-law Samantha got the vaccine on, I don't remember what day it was, but the next day they told her she was COVID positive.
And after she'd had the vaccine.
She had the vaccine the day before she became positive, and they started experiencing symptoms. So she had cough, she had muscle aches, she had headaches, she felt really, really lousy. So they have a caretaker with them that helps with the kids. And Evan and the caretaker and the two kids all tested negative. So Sam doesn't know for sure if she got it from our housekeeper, because she doesn't know if the housekeeper had already had it, had already been infected, or if Sam got it when she went to the market or whatever. We're trying to contact trace. It gets a little bit confusing as to where everybody was and who was with who. But the bottom line is that our housekeeper was in isolation. Sam got it. She went to her parents, have a little guest house. So Sam went to her parents' house and stayed in the guest house to isolate. So Evan was home with the kids. And then Evan started feeling really bad. He says, I really feel sick, but my test came back negative. So he took another test. It came back positive. Mm-hmm. So now he has it, and he has it worse than Samantha had it. He has sore throat, a really bad cough, his chest hurts, he's got headaches, his muscle aches. So he stayed home to isolated in his bedroom. That the caretaker of the kids was watching the kids, and then the caretaker tested positive. So then Samantha, who started feeling better over the last day or two, She came back home. Her doctor told her, you know, go back home and take care of the kids and get, you know, make, put Evan in isolation, get him out of the house. So Evan's at the guest house now. The caretaker is out of the picture. She's home isolating. So Samantha's, you know, still has symptoms, but they're mild, and she's taking care of the kids. And we offered to take care of the kids for her, because we've had like five tests now since this all happened, and we're negative. We're completely negative each one.
You're just showing off, Bruce. You're just showing off.
No, I mean, we're really lucky, but we offered to take the kids, but they said, no, you can't take the kids, because even though they're negative, they could be carriers.
Yes, quite.
They don't have to, you know, the kids don't normally show symptoms, but that doesn't mean they don't have it.
And just going back to your granddaughter, Sydney, who we've met, she's an absolutely wonderful young woman, but she does have cerebral palsy, so she has some significant underlying health issues, doesn't she?
She can't communicate, so if she's not feeling well, you don't really know it. So it's kind of a mess. Samantha, the good thing with Samantha is that she's feeling better. The good thing with Evan is that whatever symptoms he had haven't worsened. They're just stable. They're nagging and they're stable. But, you know, the sooner he can start getting to the other side of it and feeling a little bit better, the better. But it's just going to take, you know, lots of fluids and rest and vitamins or whatever that cocktail that they gave Donald Trump, that antibody cocktail, his doctors decided not to do that with him yet. They didn't feel he was at that stage where they needed to give him that. So
that's good.
Yeah, so that hopefully the scary part with him is kind of over and he can just, you know,
Well,
let it leave his body.
this is a stunning story, Bruce, and again drives home just how easy it is for this virus to go all sorts of places. Whilst we've been recording this program, a reminder, you're listening to American Cousins with Bruce K. Rosenblum in LA and me, Andrew David, here in Lincolnshire. It's coming up to around about 4:30. We're going to be saying goodbye in a minute. But on the 14th of January, which is when we're recording, I've just had a BBC update that says that UK-bound arrivals from South America and Portugal are banned from Friday this week because of a new Brazilian coronavirus variant. Not the South African one, not the one that we seem to have hatched here in the United Kingdom, but there's one slightly closer to you in South America. So it's, you know, just when we think we've got hold of it, we've got three vaccines now in the UK, and you've got vaccines rolling out across the United States. It's still very volatile.
Yeah. Let
And
me, yeah.
go on.
Oh, I was just going to tell you a story, but go ahead and finish what your point
No,
was.
no, no. I'm just saying, you know, with absolutely everything, it would be sort of okay if all we had to cope with was the pandemic, the terrible weather here, the gorgeous 85 degrees. We hate you in LA. But underlying, you've got all the stuff that's going on across your country and across the world. There are these serious issues, and it's just mind exploding, isn't it?
It's crazy. And I'll tell you something funny, not funny, but just small world as it is. You remember we were on a cruise a year ago.
I remember, yeah.
We left the middle of February and came back on March 1st, and that's when everything kind of went off the charts with the pandemic. It's really when it exploded. So we were lucky to get off the boat. But while we were on the boat, we met these two couples from Great Britain. And no, they're not going to replace you as our best friends.
That's
Don't
just as well. You got in just in time. Thank you.
worry. But two lovely couples. The guys had met, they were teammates. They were English football players, soccer players, as we call them here. The English, they were very high-level English football players back in their 20s and 30s, and have been remained, you know, best friends for years. And the two, and they each have their own businesses, and lovely people. And the two couples, you know, we befriended them right away because we just have this natural affinity for Brits. And we were talking about you and Deb and the radio show and all that, and we bonded immediately. And we spent a lot of time with them. We would do the trivia contests at night, and we did some tours with them to the various coffee plantations in South America and when we were there. And when we got back to California, when we got off the boat, we rented a car and drove home. And they were renting a car, and they were going to go driving in California for a couple of days before catching their flight back to England. And after they got off the boat, one of the wives got a cough, and it you know, it got over time, it got worse and worse. And by the time they got back to England, she was really sick. And as it turned out, she had COVID.
Ah, that's
She had,
early.
and apparently, you know, there were some major medical emergencies on the boat that they didn't tell us about before we disembarked. And we have a feeling that the virus had hit our boat. So we were very lucky to get off the boat. But apparently this woman contracted the virus. And their symptoms started showing up as they were getting ready to go back home. And once she got back to England, and her doctors checked her out, they confirmed that she had the virus. So she was one of the early ones who brought it off the boat. She's doing fine now, but I just received an email from my friend Richard, and he informed us that the whole ordeal shook them so much. And the fact that it really spread like wildfire throughout England, that he's decided to retire officially and enjoy life going forward, because this just changed his whole outlook on how fragile life is. And you know, you don't want to work your whole life and miss. You know, I guess the moral here is you got to stop and smell the roses every once in a while, right? And you need to do that before it's too late. I think he had a little bit of an awakening, and they're making a major lifestyle change. But it's pretty bad. It's pretty serious.
Bruce, it's time for us to say a cheerio. This time last week, you delivered a really impassioned program. Many people have commented on it. Thank you very much indeed for being so open and so honest. Because there was a sense of hope in what you said last week, and let's hope that this time next week, which will be after the inauguration, there will be still that sense, a growing sense of hope. How are you going to be celebrating the inauguration? Will you be round the television with your favorite drink and a couple of something to nibble?
I will be watching the inauguration very intensely. I'll be doing it. To be quite honest, I mean, I'm worried. I mean, there's a lot of people who are very worried about what's going to take place. And maybe at the end of the day, nothing will happen. Maybe it's just the fear of the unknown, and this is all just meant for scaring the American people. But I'll be a little bit on edge. I'm concerned. I want our new incoming administration to be safe. I don't want to see any violence. I don't want to see anything go wrong. But I'll be watching it, and I'll be happy. I'll be thrilled when Biden officially becomes our president, because I believe, and I think most people do believe, that he will work hard to unify the country and to get us healthy and to getting our standing in the world back in order. And it's kind of bittersweet in a way. It's bittersweet. I'll be happy to get Trump out of the picture, and we'll be happy to move forward. But it's again, it's bittersweet that there's no big gala celebrations. Maybe that'll happen down the road. But yeah, it's something that we'll be watching very intently. I'm sure you will too. I'm sure the whole world will be watching.
We certainly shall do. Just remind us. Do you know what time the ceremony actually takes place?
I believe it'll be in the morning. It'll be in the morning here. Probably I would say maybe 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock Eastern time. Which is probably around noon our time.
Got you. Okay, we'll all be sitting there, and no doubt we'll hopefully have great things to talk about this time next week on the next edition of American Cousins. But for the moment, can we hope that you all stay safe, and particularly your family and Samantha and Evan, they continue to recover. And let's look forward to some new beginnings this time next week. Bruce K. Rosenblum, thank you so much indeed for joining us on this week's edition of American Cousins.
You're very welcome, Andrew, and let's raise a glass for better times ahead.